Hello and welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kelly, your host, and as promised, an hour of open forum this hour with Jimmy Akin, 888-318-7884. 888-31-TRUTH. We don't always do open forum on Friday, so if this is if you're a Friday listener, it's your first time at it. Open forum means anybody can call with any question at all. Those are the rules when Jimmy's here. Basically, please do not feel that it's exclusively for Catholics. Anybody who's got a question, if you got a question about Christianity in any way, you got a question about God or philosophy or morals. And one other category, everything else. 888-318-7884 is the number. Your call, very, very much wanted. 888-318-7884. And Jimmy Akin is senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, the author of a whole bunch of stuff, including a book called The Bible is a Catholic Book, and a book you hear us give away here all the time on Catholic Answers Live called The Words of Eternal Life, True Happiness, and Where to Find It. In addition to all that, he's the proprietor of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Hello, Jimmy Akin.
Hello, Cy Kellett.
It's nice to see you again.
It is nice to see you again also.
I saw you briefly this morning where we had the failed attempt at pre-recording a show.
Hey, but it wasn't my fault.
No, it was not. Oh, Darren says it was my fault.
Nah, well, it was a technical issue that got in our way.
You know, the file that got deleted, it didn't look like it was doing anything, so Darren deleted it. It just happened to be the file we needed to do the show. That's all. These things, am I about summing that up about right? Yeah. Sorry about that, Darren. 888-318-7884 is the number if you've got a question. Oh, by the way, all Darren's kids were in here yesterday. His daughter, Kate, it was her birthday. She was six.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah, and she wanted ice cream sandwiches made with cookies for her birthday. Did you guys get them? Did you do it? Nice. Good for you, Kate.
I didn't know they made ice cream sandwiches with cookies.
Well, they do in the Darren household.
Okay,
the,
cool.
The Delosiers do.
on the cutting edge.
Yeah, on the cutting edge of children's cuisine. Again, 888-318-7884, the number 888-318-7884. You can call and ask whatever you like today on Mysterious World. What dropped, Jimmy?
On Mysterious, well, you can ask anything you like on Catholic Answers Live.
Oh, yeah. I kind of jammed those together.
on Mysterious World, we interviewed a Dominican priest named Father Nathan Castle, who reports having a ministry to souls in purgatory. He has dreams of people dying in various situations that he interprets as cries for help. And so he and a prayer partner have a ministry where he and a number of prayer partners have a ministry where they enter into prayer and they seek to make contact with these souls and provide them with a kind of counseling to help free them from attachments that are holding them back in their journey to God. And this is something that is consistent with the way the Church articulates the doctrine of purgatory, which, if you look in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, it indicates that the purpose of purgatory is to free us from disordered desires and unhealthy attachments to things in our life that would hold us back from being in full union with God. And so they provide a kind of counseling to try to help these souls move on and let go of these things and progress in their journey towards God. And so today he told us about his ministry to souls. And next Friday, we're going to go into analysis mode and talk about speaking with the dead and what's permitted, what's not permitted, what's kind of in the middle and maybe debatable. And we're going to analyze not just what Father Castle does, but the issue more broadly.
Check it out at mysterious.fm or just type in Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World into your machine. Or just call right now and talk with Jimmy, 888-318-7884. We'll start with Anna in Atlanta, Georgia today, watching on YouTube. Anna, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hi, Jimmy. I have a question about Colossians 2:16-17. I was discussing with an SDA friend of mine, and she mentioned that the Sabbath mentioned on that verse, that is said to be a shadow of things to come, does not refer to the weekday Sabbath, but it refers to some festivals. I'm not sure exactly how to put it, but mm-hmm. she said it doesn't indicate, this verse is not talking about not having to be obligated to keep the Saturday Sabbath.
Okay, so that's an interesting strategy, and I'm not surprised that she's denying that it's the weekly Sabbath, given that she's Seventh-day Adventist, because Seventh-day Adventists believe that we are supposed to keep the seventh-day Sabbath, which is Saturday. But what Paul says in this passage is that because the various Old Testament ceremonies were shadows pointing forward to Christ, and now that the substance which cast the shadows, Christ himself, has come, we're no longer bound to those Old Testament ceremonies. Not even Jewish people are, and Gentiles were never bound to them. And so he says, therefore, let no one judge you in food or drink. So you don't have to worry about keeping kosher. You can eat pork and things like that. And don't let anybody judge you in regard to a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath. And it is not plausible to interpret Paul's reference to a Sabbath as anything other than the weekly Sabbath in this context, because what Paul has just done, he's just named five categories of things. Food and drink were the first two. And then the second three things he mentions, festivals, new moons, and Sabbath, were the three kinds of Jewish holy days. There were the annual festivals like Passover or Tabernacles. There were the monthly new moons, and then there were the weekly Sabbaths. And so in this context, now the normal meaning of the word Sabbath is Saturday, the seventh day of the week. It also could be used to refer to the entire week, but that doesn't apply in this case, because in the context, he refers to the festivals and the new moons, which were the other two kinds of Jewish liturgical celebrations, in addition to the weekly Sabbath. So since two of the three are the other two types of Jewish religious festivals or religious ceremonial times, the third, the Sabbath, must be a reference to the third kind of Jewish ceremonial time, which was the weekly Sabbath or Saturday. So exegetically, or, you know, interpreting the text based on what it says, this just has to be the weekly Sabbath. And your Seventh-day Adventist friend, while she may be well-meaning, is mistaken when it comes to the correct interpretation of this passage.
Okay. Thank you very much. Can I ask one follow-up question?
Real quick. We're just getting near the break, so go quick.
Okay. Can you point me to any resource that I can read the Catholic view of this and also help her with other questions?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part of your question.
Like any books or like any resources, Catholic resources you can point me to.
Okay.
Regarding Sabbaths and all these.
Yeah, so one place that I would point you towards is the Catechism of the Catholic Church, which has a discussion of this issue. Also, my book, The Fathers Know Best, has quotations from the early church fathers discussing early Christian views on this. We have a tract, I believe, at Catholic.com called Sabbath or Sunday that looks into this, although that may not be a separate tract than what's in The Fathers Know Best. But if you go to Catholic.com and type in Sabbath, a bunch of things will come up. Also, you can look at, if you want to go deeper, you can look at books on the Jewish calendar and how it works. A lot of those are kind of technical. You also could look at commentaries on Colossians that will have scholarly discussions of this passage. But those are some of the resources you might want to check out to follow up with.
And thank you very much for the call. That brings us to the break. We've got to take that break. We'll be right back with more Open Forum with Jimmy Akin on Catholic Answers Live.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The most original Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
What have you always wanted to know about the Vatican? Well, I'm your Vatican Insider, and I answer that question when I bring you the news about the Pope, Vatican City, and I share insights and stories from a broad spectrum of church ministries.
Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis, Saturday night, 9 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Back to Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin, our guest today. I'm going to go right back to the phones, but before I do, I got to just remind you because the 31st is Monday.
So you're not going directly back to the phones because you said I'm going to go directly back to the phones, but first, so it's like we're making an intermediate stop. We're not going directly there.
Yes, this is not the express bus. Yeah, so okay. Maybe a slight misdirection there.
Slight detour.
And I'll try to make it slight. Because the 31st is the last day of this month. It's coming up on Monday. And we promised that we would give a discount on two things until the 31st. And so I just want to make sure people know. If you want to come to the Catholic Answers Conference and you get your ticket before the 31st, you get $50 off. Just use the promo code EARLY when you go to CatholicAnswersConference.com. That conference is coming up in September 21st through the 24th, right here in sunny San Diego. CatholicAnswersConference.com. Use the promo code EARLY until Monday midnight, Honolulu time. And if you're coming with us to Rome, there are still a few spots left, but the $300 off per ticket for the pilgrimage to Rome, November 9th through the 18th, will end also at midnight on Monday. Just go to CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com. You don't need any promo code there. Anybody who signs up is getting $300 off right now. Whatever the list price is that you see there, $300 will come off of it. Go to CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com. Now, I really am going straight to calls. And Luke got up on a Saturday morning in Seoul, South Korea, and he said, I'm going to call Catholic Answers Live. And Luke is an old friend of ours here. Hello again, Luke.
Hello. Hello, Sai. Hello, Jimmy. It's been a while.
Good. Howdy.
How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. My question is if Catholic priests are allowed to run for office, and the reason why I'm asking is because the Nigerian priest in the last election ran for governorship office and won the election, and I think he got suspended by the bishop or something.
Okay.
But after he won the election, I think the bishop accepted him back and agreed to work with him as the governor. So I don't know how this actually works. So I called to ask.
All right, Luke. All right. Can Catholic priests run for office?
Well, there's not a requirement of divine law that they can't run for office. God hasn't said anything directly about that. So historically, there have been Catholic clergymen who have been government officials, like, for example, Cardinal Wolsey in England. Just before the Protestant Reformation, he was a cardinal, so he was a priest, but he also was a high government official in England. Similarly, Cardinal Richelieu in France, if I'm not mistaken, also had a government post. So it's not a matter of divine law, and the practice of what's been allowed has changed over time. Because even though there were Catholic priests who did have government posts in the past, it is not allowed under current canon law. This is something that was made clear during the reign of John Paul II. He revised the Code of Canon Law, and the new edition came out in 1983. And one of the provisions is that Catholic priests are not allowed to serve in government offices. The reason for that, presumably, is because there's a difference between the calling of the laity and the calling of the clergy. The clergy's role is to articulate the Christian faith, including its moral principles. The laity's role is to apply those principles to society. And so it's appropriate in a certain way for laity to have government office, but it can cause problems if a priest were to have a role in the government, because politics by its nature is political, and people divide up into teams when it comes to politics. They get in different political tribes. And if you have priests who go beyond just articulating the Christian faith, including its moral principles, if they're actually trying to apply those in concrete political situations, then you're very likely to have confusion and alienation on the part of the laity from the faith. Because, and there is an example I can cite here in the United States at the time, there was a member of our House of Representatives who was named Father, it's either Richard or Robert Drinan. And he was a Jesuit who, before the new code was released, had run for and won elective office as a member of the U.S. House of Representatives. And he was a Democrat. Okay, so how is the faithful supposed to look at that? You've got this clearly a priest who's a member of the Democratic Party and is advocating Democratic policies in the United States House of Representatives. Well, if you are a non-Democrat, if you are an independent or a member of the Republican Party, and you see this priest serving as a liberal Democrat, you might say, oh, well, this guy is not a member of my tribe. He is a member of a different tribe that's opposed to my tribe. And I don't like that. And I therefore don't want to be open to the Catholic faith because it's associated with my political enemies. And so because of concerns like that, John Paul II wanted to get the clergy out of politics so they could stick to their task. They could stay on mission, in other words, of preaching the Christian faith, including its moral principles, but not getting tangled up in political battles that could alienate people from Christ and his church. And so even though, and they tried to argue, you know, well, Father Drinan still should be able to serve in the House of Representatives, and maybe he can be grandfathered or something like that. But Rome said, no, he needs to resign. He can't, if he's going to be a priest, he can't be a member of the U.S. House of Representatives. He cannot hold political office in that way. And so Father Drinan, to his credit, ended up resigning. He didn't leave the priesthood. He stuck with his priesthood, and he stepped back from public office. Now, I'm not familiar. I think I may have heard of the situation that you mentioned in Nigeria, but I'm not familiar with the details of it, so I can't really comment on it directly. But at least up to now, there has been, in the last few decades, a strict prohibition on members of the Catholic clergy, or at least priests, and, you know, of course, bishops and cardinals above them. But there has been a strict prohibition on priests holding political office under Catholic canon law. What's happening in the current situation and what the eventual outcome of it will be, I couldn't say.
Okay, Luke.
Oh, no, that's great. Thank you for the clarification.
All right. Well,
Can I actually follow up? Is it okay?
Can you? Oh, you want to follow up? Yeah. Again, real quick, if you could, Luke.
A few years ago, my dad was shot on his way to church, and he died.
Oh no.
And he died on my mom's arm, and he was just your age, right? Yeah. So I just wanted to know, I've been struggling with that for a long time, if that was the will of God for such thing to happen.
Oh, Luke, first of all, I'm so sorry on the loss of your father. Very, very sorry.
Especially in the tragic, dramatic way that you describe. It must have been very traumatic, not only for you, but for your mother and other members of your family. And I encourage the listeners to pray for your father and for all victims of violence and those who survive them. In terms of the will of God, there are different opinions. According to one opinion, God is the author of life. He gives us life as a gift, and it's up to him to determine the circumstances of how much of that gift we receive. And he also determines the circumstances under which we leave this life, which, of course, is only a prelude to life eternal. So there's still an infinity of life ahead of us. And even though we may suffer very, very dramatic and bad things in this life, God will more than make it up to all of us. St. Paul talks about how, you know, there's an enormous weight of glory in store for us in the next life that exceeds whatever we've suffered in this life. So there's hope in that. Now, that's one opinion. There is another opinion, though, that would say that God does not actively choose exactly how long a person lives or the exact circumstances of their death, that instead humans have free will. And so a person can, by the choices they make, affect how long they're going to live, and the choices other people make can affect how long that person's lives. So if someone misused their free will and shot your father on the way to church, that wouldn't be God's decision, that God chose to have this happen. Instead, God would, on this view, merely tolerate that this happened. And we know, as the Catechism explains, God only tolerates an evil if he's going to bring about a greater good. So God would not have even allowed your father to experience this if he wasn't going to bring about something even better as a result. We may not know in this life what that better thing is, but just like parents will tolerate their children having the pain of being vaccinated against diseases, they tolerate that because the vaccine is going to bring about a greater good. You know, the child is never going to get smallpox, for example, or other horrible diseases, even though it means going through a temporary amount of pain in order to get to that good goal. And so on this view, God didn't choose to have your father die in this way or in these circumstances. He merely tolerated it in the knowledge that he will ultimately bring about a greater good for your father and for your family and for everybody by tolerating this evil. But the person who's responsible for this is whoever used their free will to choose to shoot your father. That's the person that's responsible for this, not God. And it was a genuine evil what they did. They murdered an innocent person, and God will hold them accountable for using their free will in that evil way. He also will work with the situation to bring about a greater good, just like he tolerated the death of his son on the cross in order to bring about the salvation of the world. So even in the case of his own son, God was willing to tolerate an evil to bring about ultimate good. It's very painful when we experience evil, and it's understandable the pain that you and the rest of your family have gone through in the wake of this experience. I had not previously known about this, but God is with you in the suffering, and he will more than make it up to your father and to you and your family in days to come, either in this life or in the next life or both. So be of heart in that God will bring about a greater good, and he would not have tolerated this unless he was going to bring about that greater good.
Luke, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much for the call. I know that you're Nigerian living in South Korea. Was your father in Nigeria or Korea when this happened?
Yeah, he was in Nigeria. It was just on a faithful Sunday morning, he just came out with my mom to go to church, and then this unknown gunmen came out and shot him, and before they got to the hospital, he died on my mom's arm, so because of loss of blood. So,
yeah, yeah,
it happened in Nigeria, unfortunately.
I'm so sorry. No. I'm so sorry, Luke. It's always such a pleasure for us that we don't get a lot of calls from Seoul, South Korea. So it's always been a pleasure when you call, and I hope you'll keep calling.
And I want to reiterate inviting the listeners to pray for Luke and his family and the repose of his father's soul.
The number here is 888-318-7884. We'd love it if you call. There'll be just one line open right now, but you're welcome to fill it up. Jimmy Akins here. It's Open Forum. We'll continue with that right up to this on Catholic Answers Live. Are you ready to defend your faith in a world of unbelief? Join us at the 9th Annual Catholic Answers Apologetics Conference. This year's theme, I Believe in God, and it'll help you provide clear and charitable answers to atheism, agnosticism, and plain old indifference. Don't miss what promises to be the event of the season. Join us in San Diego from September 21st through 24th as we welcome our special guest, Dr. Scott Hahn, and an all-star lineup of great Catholic speakers. Spend quality time with your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and enjoy 4 days of fun, fellowship, and adoration of the Almighty. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 888-291-8000 to register. Enter promo code EARLY and save $50. That's CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity. In the early church was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Jimmy Akin is our guest, and it is a little bit of bonus open forum for a summer Friday afternoon. I am going to go next to Caitlin in Pennsylvania, who's listening on the EWTN app. Caitlin, you've been very patient. Thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Oh, you're welcome. I just love the app and love the show.
Thank you.
My question is, I heard that the Antichrist is going to reign on the earth for 3 years until Mary has her triumph. Are we in the time where he's reigning now before Mary has her triumph?
Well, I don't see any evidence for that. Now, there's a certain sense in which antichrists have always been with us. That's something that John talks about in his first epistle. He says that to his readers, you've heard that the antichrist is coming, and indeed, many antichrists have gone out into the world. So there have already been antichrists down throughout history. But if we're talking about a single antichrist who is the climactic villain of world history, I don't see any evidence that we're living in his reign. That would mean he is a living individual and that he's currently reigning, so he's currently in a powerful political office. And I don't see anybody that fits the biblical description of the Antichrist. Now, one of the things that John tells us about him is that the spirit of the Antichrist and the Antichrist himself denies the incarnation of Christ. So, you know, he denies that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh. And so that's part of what the Antichrist does. He is also commonly identified with figures like St. Paul talks about as the man of sin and the beast of the book of Revelation. Now, in its literal fulfillment, the beast of the book of Revelation appears to be the line of Roman emperors in the first century and is associated in a particular way with the emperor Nero. That's, in fact, what the number 666 seems to refer to, because if you add up Nero Caesar in Hebrew or Aramaic, it adds up to 666. If you spell it a little differently, it adds, because you can spell it more than one way, but if you spell it a little differently, it'll add up to 616. And there are, in fact, a few early manuscripts of Revelation that give the number 616, even though most of them give 666. And that suggests that there were early Christians who recognized that Nero Caesar is associated with the Antichrist in a particular way, and that's why we find both numbers in early manuscripts, both 616 and 666. Also, from the way that the book of Revelation describes the beast, it indicates that the beast rules the world, which means the Roman world, and it demands worship as a god, and it persecutes the church and its apostles to death. Okay, well, the apostles are gone from the scene, so the beast is not today going to be literally fulfilled because the line of first century Roman emperors no longer exists. So that seems to be the literal fulfillment of the beast. But it's commonly thought, and I think with some good reason, that there will be a spiritual echo, a later fulfillment of the model of the beast at the end of the world before the second coming. And that's who is typically referred to as the Antichrist. But I don't see anybody who fits on the world scene today who fits the model of the Antichrist. There isn't a world leader that rules either the world or the whole Roman Empire. This non-existent leader does not deny that Jesus came in the flesh, and this non-existent leader does not have the number 666, and when you add up his name, and he's not persecuting the church or its leaders to death. So if the final Antichrist is like the beast, there's nobody like that on the world scene today. And so it seems to me that we do not have good evidence that we are living in the reign of the final Antichrist. There are certainly Antichrist, you know, figures that oppose the church today, but they're on the same order as the Antichrist figures we've had with us all the way down through history. None of them are the final climactic Antichrist. And so I would say, be at peace about this. We just don't have evidence that we're living in that time yet.
Caitlin, as much as I love talking about the Antichrist, I'm going to have to leave that there because lines are full. Oh, go ahead.
By the way, one other thing. The idea, and I am aware of some people like Countdown to the Kingdom who have this idea that first the Antichrist is going to reign, and then there's going to be this age of Christian triumph over the world. That is extremely hard, but not yet the second coming. That is extremely hard to square with what the church actually teaches. Because if you look in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, this is essentially a version of what's called millenarianism. Or in Protestant circles, it's called premillennialism. It's also called chiliasm. And it's the idea that there will be this long period of triumph prior to the end of the world. And that is not the understanding of the church. If you read the Catechism of the Catholic Church, and it's around paragraph 676, it's only 10 paragraphs away from 666. I do not know why they didn't just change the numbering.
What an opportunity.
But I know, it's such a great opportunity. But if you look there, it says that the church has ruled that even even mitigated systems of millenarianism have been rejected by the church. And if you dig into the to where the church has talked about this previously, the Holy Office, now the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, had ruled that the systems of these sort cannot be safely taught. That was the actual original ruling. They cannot be safely taught. And instead, what the Catechism says is that the Antichrist is going to persecute the church, and the church will almost become extinct, but then Christ will return and save his church. Not that Mary is going to have a big triumph that's going to last for a lengthy period before the second coming. It's going to be the second coming that ends the reign of the Antichrist. And so the theories that you have encountered, Caitlin, are not only not supported by evidence on the current world scene, they actually appear to be in conflict with the teaching of the church.
Again, Caitlin, thank you very, very much for the question. I'm going to Brian in New York, who's listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Brian, go ahead with your question.
Hi, yeah, I'm Brian, 54 years old, father of three, two girls and a boy. My oldest just made me a grandpa.
Oh, congratulations!
Oh, yay.
yeah. So basically, I'm calling to spare you the details. I have symptoms of basically of multiple swollen glands, and has led me to an oncology appointment on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And basically, my fears are at the worst.
Okay.
The diagnosis is going to be
cancer.
You know, the worst case scenario.
Okay. So how can we help you, Brian?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I feel like that I'm going to be if this becomes, incurable, or if it's, I just feel like, the anxiety level is that I'm just going to be left behind, and my kids are going to go on and have kids, and I'm not going to be there. But,
okay.
My son is, he's serving in Italy. In the military, I have a beautiful 16-year-old girl, and my 23-year-old girl is married with my granddaughter.
Brian,
but
this is the anxiety seems overwhelming, but we don't have a diagnosis yet.
No, I understand that, but it's just like the fact that I was led to an oncology appointment due to my symptoms. I get that.
Okay.
It's not an official diagnosis yet. But,
did you want to ask Jimmy something about it?
I don't really have. It's basically the anxiety level.
Okay.
I also feel like, of course, like everybody else, when they go down these roads, they feel, is it something I did? Is it something that the Lord is unhappy with me? It's something that,
okay.
Let's get an answer to that, Brian.
Yeah, because we're getting near break time, so I want to give you the best answer I can. The first thing I want to do is encourage the listeners to pray for Brian and for everyone who's in similar situations, because there are a lot of people who face this. Brian, as you know, death is something that comes for everyone, and we all will experience it, assuming Jesus doesn't come back first. We're all going to experience death. And we're all going to have people we leave behind and things that we're not going to be able to complete in this life. I understand how frightening it is, and it's understandable that you're frightened by this. God built humans to be averse to death, to have death aversion. Even Jesus had death aversion. If you look at what happened to him in the Garden of Gethsemane, he's clearly experiencing anxiety and fear about his coming death. So this is a very human thing. It is very natural. It's something that God, these feelings are something that God built into us. And it's part of what helps us survive. It helps keep us alive. The fact that we are averse to death, that we're afraid of it happening to us, is something that motivates us to stay out of situations that are dangerous. So it plays up, these feelings actually can play a positive role in life. At the same time, we need to not be controlled by our fears. It's understandable that we have anxieties, and it's understandable that we check them out, and that's good. You said you have glands that are swollen, and so you're checking them out. But as Cy pointed out, you don't have a diagnosis yet. And that brings to mind something that actually happened to me. My wife died 31 years ago. She died at the age of 28, which is much younger than you and I are now. And she had, or actually it may have been 27 now that I think about it, but she died of cancer. And within a year, I had a very traumatic experience of moving out to California to start work for Catholic Answers. And I was still grieving my wife, and I had witnessed what happened to her with cancer. And I was feeling around on my body, and it's like, I've got this lymph node. I've got these lymph nodes. They seem kind of big. And so I was feeling my lymph nodes. They seemed to be swollen. I was wondered that I might have lymphatic cancer, and so, or cancer that had spread to my lymph nodes. So I had it checked out too. And I went in, I had surgery, I had a biopsy on the lymph nodes. And the good news was that it came back and it's like, no, you just got big lymph nodes. They're not cancerous. And the same thing could happen to you. So I would mention that as something to think about as a way of helping control your anxiety and moderate it during this time. It's not like the anxiety is going to go away completely, but that realization, that's a practical realization that even when you have swollen glands, it doesn't automatically mean you have cancer. Then there's something else, which also dates from the time that my wife died. I was talking to her while my wife was still undergoing chemotherapy. I was talking to her oncologist, and I was watching what was happening to my wife and how much she was dealing with. And I said to the oncologist, how can you do this work? You know, because I was imagining every case is like my wife's, and I wouldn't, if I was an oncologist, I don't know how I would get through the day. And he said, your wife's case is not typical. She had a rare aggressive form of cancer that he thought she only had for a few months. And he said, this is not what happens with most of my patients. Most of my patients that do have cancer, they come in, they get their treatments, and they're okay. They aren't in danger of imminently dying. They're able to go on and have quality of life. And there are, it's just, what's happening to your wife is unusual. It is not typical of a cancer patient. And so even if you did end up getting a diagnosis of cancer, it wouldn't mean imminent death. It wouldn't mean imminent illness. The cancer might very well be treatable or even curable. That's the case for a huge number of people. There also are cancers that some people have that don't actually kill you. Yeah, you've got some cells that are growing abnormally, but you're not going to die from the cancer. You may die with the cancer, but it's going to be something else that is ultimately what is going to happen. The cancer itself will not kill you. And so it's understandable that you be concerned about this, but don't focus on the worst case scenario. And that brings us to a couple of spiritual points. One of them I haven't yet mentioned in today's episode, but, you know, ask yourself the question, is focusing on my current anxieties going to help? Will it help me to focus on my current anxieties, or will it help me more to set them aside, or at least try to set them aside and think about something else, something more constructive, something pleasant, like spending time with my family, however much I have left, whether it's a short time or a long time, being with my family and enjoying them and enjoying my granddaughter. All of those are good things to do. And what's going to help me more is help. Is it going to help me more to worry about this right now? Or is it going to help me and my family more to do something else right now and do my best to try to set these aside, these anxieties? My suspicion is it's going to be the latter, because you've already done what you can do for now, which is make an appointment to get this checked out. You've already taken the practical step. And so further worrying about it, I don't see how that's really going to help you. Now, of course, you can do things like praying about it, but even then, don't let, I would recommend that you not let the worries consume you, because that will not help. God is not punishing you. It's not going to help you to worry about, have I done something that offended God? I already talked about, earlier in this same episode about the principles that are involved in God tolerating evil. And even if it's true that you end up with a cancer diagnosis, that's something God's tolerating. He's not causing you to have this. And so don't punish yourself, because God is not punishing you. If you think, well, I'm a sinner and I've done something sinful, well, that's true of all of us. But that doesn't mean God is giving you cancer as a punishment. If you have sins that you haven't yet confessed, well, go to confession. But don't punish yourself into thinking you've brought this about. It's something God is tolerating, but it's not something that God is causing. And that's related to the spiritual principle that Jesus articulates in the Sermon on the Mount, where he says, don't worry. Every day, don't worry about tomorrow. Every day has enough trouble on its own. Take things one day at a time. So instead of worrying about, am I going to be in a worst case scenario situation, do your best to set those worries aside and live in today, and do the positive things that you can do today, rather than just worrying about and obsessing about what's going to happen in the future. Because you can't, as Jesus says, you can't make one hair of your head white or black. There are some things that are just beyond our power. So don't worry about the things that are beyond your power. You've already taken the practical step that you can. You've made the appointment. Go through with the appointment and see what happens. You may have a wonderful diagnosis if there's nothing wrong with at all. You just got big glands. Or it's something else it is cancer, but it's treatable, or even curable. So don't worry about those eventualities. Just focus on doing what you can right now that will be a benefit to you and to others. The second principle I mentioned, because we are all eventually going to die, something's going to get us. And whatever that is, it means our lives are finite and they are of different lengths. None of us, as Gandalf says, is promised a time. But that's part of our existence, but it's not the end of our existence. As I was discussing with Luke earlier in this episode, as St. Paul points out, we've got eternity waiting for us. Death is just a transition. But after this life, however long it is or however it ends, we get to be with God. In fact, St. Paul says he's looking forward to that. He says it's better to be with God than to live in the current fallen world. And it may be God's will that I live here for now, but he's looking forward to departing and being with Christ. And it's not just Christ that we're going to be with, because we're not going to be separated from ever from our families. We're going to meet them again in the afterlife, and we're going to have eternity to spend together in joy and in love. And that includes members of our family we didn't get to meet. So let's say over the next 1,000 years, you've got 500 descendants or 2,000 descendants. You're going to have eternity to get to meet and know them all and celebrate the lives that they had because of you. because you were their ancestor that allowed them to come into this world. So there is, as St. Paul says, a weight of glory ahead of us, and it far exceeds anything we suffer in this life, including whatever our final illness happens to be. So I would encourage you to not cross your bridges before you come to them. Don't worry to the extent you can. Don't worry about a diagnosis you don't have yet and that may not be as bad as what you're fearing. Don't focus just on the worst case scenarios, but trust God, take things one day at a time, and realize that even if death comes sooner rather than later, it's something that is not the end. And there is something even better for you and your family in the future.
Brian, thank you so much for the call. I do hope that that was helpful. I hope many people are indeed praying for you. We're going to take a quick break and be right back with more Open Forum.
Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin, our guest. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Ryan's on the line in Nebraska, watching on YouTube. Ryan, thank you for the call. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
So can you hear me good?
Can I read your question?
No, I mean, hear me good.
Oh, yeah, I can hear you, yes. I'm sorry. I guess I didn't hear you that well, but now I can. All right, go ahead with the question.
Okay, yeah.
We're really close to the end, though. So.
I'm currently in RSCIA, and before then I was watching these State of Contest videos. I'm sure you know Most Holy Family Monastery, and they were saying, like, before Vatican II, they were allowed to attend gatherings of non-Catholics. And he was saying, like, they were saying, like, John.
All right. Ryan, I'm going to have to read your question because it's coming in and out. And so I get the context is what people say
state
about
of
we,
a contest.
We yeah, state of a contest saying before the Second Vatican Council, we weren't allowed to gather with non-Catholics. Now we are gathering with non-Catholics. So what's the church's teaching on attending non-Catholic gatherings and religious services, Jimmy?
Okay, so first of all, one of the characteristics of groups like Most Holy Family Monastery and other Seat of Acontists is they don't really understand what heresy is. Heresy is the culpable rejection or refusal to believe of a dogma, which is something that the Catholic Church has infallibly defined to be divinely revealed. And they often use a kind of straw man argument where they find something they disagree with and say, oh, this must be a heresy. Well, okay, so here the proposition presumably would be that, at least the extreme form of the argument, would be that it's a heresy to say that there are circumstances in which one can attend non-Catholic religious services, except the church has never infallibly defined that that's divinely revealed. And in fact, that's not even consistent with Catholic tradition. If you go back and you read older moral and pastoral theologies from before Vatican II, they're going to say things like, well, we shouldn't take Protestant sacraments because they're not valid and so forth. But they'll acknowledge that there are situations in which it's legitimate for a Catholic to go to them. For example, if you're a Catholic servant of a Protestant master and they require you to go to their services, you can go as long as you also fulfill your Catholic obligations. And essentially, that's the Catholic position today. As long as you fulfill your Catholic obligations, you can go to Protestant services. You need to protect your faith as you do that, but it is not in principle illegitimate. There's more than I could say about that, but I'm afraid we're at the end of the episode, so I'll have to leave it there.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Jimmy. Appreciate the bonus hour with you this week. Thanks very much.
My pleasure.
And that'll do it for us. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.